powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost. Here we go
now. Bump, little did I think that yesterday would begin with donuts and end with the death of the Pac-12, but here we are. Happy Friday to everyone. We do have some major news to talk about, though. Yesterday, John Wilner of the San Jose Mercury News reporting that USC and UCLA had applied for membership to the Pac-10. We've since learned that that membership has been accepted. Those two now leaving the Pac-12. We're going to start with this basic question, Bump. Why those two schools in particular matter?
Well, let me just say, for all the Pac-12 alumni and people who support the Pac-12, this one hurts for sure.
Yeah.
And why those two schools? Because they are the most historic schools in the Pac-12. You're in the L.A. market, right? Imagine you bring UCLA and USC over to your conference. You automatically just get a whole bunch of shine, right? That's USC and UCLA, they're the shiny toy in the Pac-12. No matter what their records are, no matter what type of football is on the field, they're still going to get recruits. They're still going to be on TV. It's all about the money. So if you are going to go after anybody in the Pac-12, you start with UCLA, USC, then Oregon and UW follow.
Now, while I have enjoyed the memes and the tweets to come from this, with like one was Barbie and Ken showing up, and it's like USC and UCLA riding through some Big Ten games in November. There was one with Paris and Nicole Richie,
yeah,
from The Simple Life. Shout out to my like older millennials who remember that show. And all the jokes are funny. And yet, the death, which feels imminent, of the Pac-12 is not. Is there any way to get on life support?
There is. There is a way. Now, the Pac-12 will never be the same, right? You're not going to have the prestige. And it was on the downfall anyway the past, 5 to 8 years.
Yeah.
The Pac-12 wasn't what it used to be back in my day, the 03, 4, 5, 6, 7s, when you had 3 or 4 ranked teams every year and you were going after it. How do you save this? You got to get some teams to flip. And I'm looking at some teams that you should go after, right? You can go after Baylor. They got a good basketball team, football team. BYU, they beat up on the Pac-12 every year, it seems like, anyway. Go after them. Obviously, Boise State, you're not going to get the, the media or the coverage that you would get out of these other schools. But you got to go after Houston. They're going to the Big 12 in 2023. San Diego State, Texas Tech. You got to do whatever you can to get a couple of these teams to flip or just get guys interested. It's going to change the way you travel in the Pac-12, because that was convenient. Like the longest flight I took, yeah, in the Pac-12 was like a 2-hour flight. Beautiful. Now, once you start going east, those flights get longer. It changes some things, but you got to go grab some other teams or this conference will start looking like the Mountain West.
Now, that conference is going to be changing forever, though there is a way that geographically some of these major schools could still face off. We're going to get to that big topic when it comes to kind of a college football super league between the SEC and Big Ten in just 1 second. That's part of this, but let's jump back to UW and Oregon. Tom Fornelli of CBS Sports, or Curtis, as they say in Italian,
Fornelli,
was talking about UW and Oregon, whether he'd see them follow suit.
I don't think we're done here, because realistically, if USC and UCLA are joining the Big Ten, like you said, the closest Big Ten school right now to those two in Los Angeles is Nebraska. I don't know if they want to join the conference thinking that they will be the only two West Coast teams in the conference in the long haul, so I wouldn't be shocked at all to see another couple programs, maybe Oregon or Washington, joining the Big Ten as a follow-up to this.
Important to note from his comment that it does make scheduling a little easier and more convenient for the Big Ten as a whole if they can see, well, we've got two more West Coast schools. Let's knock out a couple games there so that we don't have these two traveling a bajillion miles for every single game they're going to play, nor any of our other teams traveling across the country. So we get like a little mini West division out there. For UW and Oregon, hypothetically, there are still people saying, I really hope we can make this work, because there are two very important rivalries between mm-hmm. those schools and other schools within their state. Here in Washington, obviously, the Apple Cup. Bump, you're a Coug.
Yeah.
If you're Wazoo, you're looking at it saying, look, UW, I get why you would apply for membership there, and I'm probably expecting it, but that changes this rivalry forever, and that's really sad.
It does change. If UW were to leave, two things can happen. Either the Apple Cup is now moved to September because it has to be like a non-conference
yep.
game. And we're not used to that. We're used to late November type Apple Cups when it's
Apple
cold.
The Apple Cup is Thanksgiving. They go hand in hand.
Right?
Like, there is no separation.
Yeah, or you just eliminate the game. Now, this game's been going on. My last Apple Cup was the 100th Apple Cup. So we're about 115 or 16 Apple Cups in right now. It's a tradition like no other. Even though UW has gotten the best of us most of the time, no matter what the records are, you look forward to this game. And then you go to Oregon. What about the Oregon-Oregon State game? That's been going on for a while. It's either a September game or it is eliminated. We've seen this happen before with, was it Texas and, who was it, Texas and Texas Tech, Curtis, that eliminated their game?
Texas A&M.
They've eliminated the game. Yeah. So if you do eliminate this game, there's generations that are going to feel the impact of this. The younger generations, not so much. But tradition, and I think that's what we're losing in college football is tradition and loyalty. But when you're throwing out the type of money that these TV channels or whatnot are throwing out there, like the Big Ten is scheduled to make $1 billion in TV revenue, and they're going to split it with these universities. Each university is going to get almost $100 million a year. Why wouldn't you leave? $100 million doesn't just help the football program. It helps basketball, softball, swimming, everything else involved. So money talks, money talks. And we are on the verge of probably losing a tradition like no other in the Northwest.
That tradition, by the way, extends all the way back to 1900. Obviously, there have been different iterations of the conference and the conference alignment and everything. But those two schools facing off all the way back in 1900 ended with a tie, by the way.
Really?
Oh, just unforgivable.
A tie. Who ties?
I like to pretend in my mind the year 1900 didn't happen. You know what I mean? I just ignore that one. It's really upsetting for those schools. Now, moving forward, kind of the next couple minutes here, let's talk about some other possibilities with where college football could go. Rich Eisen talking about the potential of a super league. He says he thinks the accelerant is those NIL deals.
But I'm telling you, the battle lines have been drawn for quite some time. The NIL world is only serving to accelerate it. The fire has been burning. The embers are apparent. This NIL stuff is an accelerant. Okay? That's what this is. It is coming. The Super League of college athletics is coming. And you better get on board, because if you're not going to get on board, you're going to be left behind.
You can look at it in a couple different ways. Number one, would a Super League, meaning the SEC and Big Ten having like 20 schools apiece, and then presumably having divisions, right? You could have USC, UCLA, UW, Oregon, maybe one or two other schools in the Big Ten, but like the Western division of the Big Ten. So there's still some geographical games there and some rivalries that are held up. UW and Oregon would be one of those, for example, USC and UCLA. But obviously so much of the Pac-12 history changes with that. So you still have some geographical stuff holding up. In theory, Bump, the college football product could be great. You've got these major schools. I mean, it's as close to professional ball as you can get, though there are aspects to college football that have changed forever. In your mind, would a Super League make the product objectively better or worse?
Here's the thing. I might go against the grain with this comment, but I think it would make it better. It'd make it better because everybody's involved, right? It looks more like the NBA, the NFL, to where we're all under the same umbrella. There are divisions, and you get to play a whole bunch of different teams. Now, selfishly, as a Washington State alum, I'm like, well, that kind of leaves us out. You know, it leaves the smaller universities out. And then I start to think about it as like soccer, the UEFA Cup or the European League, right? If you have all these schools involved, and there are going to be schools at the bottom that are going to have good years and bad years, they can start relegating dudes. But like, look, you finish bottom two or three in this division, this conference, you're out. Let's bring somebody else in.
Yeah.
And I kind of like the idea of that. But just like Rich said, it's all driven by NIL. So if you're not able to recruit these top players like this kid who's getting $9 million to go to Miami,
oh my God,
you're constantly going to be at the bottom of this. So this forces schools like UW to use all of their resources, right? There's so much money in the state of Washington. Like, use all of your resources if you want to be competitive. That's why the South is ahead of the game when it comes to this. The South and the Midwest, because that's what they care about. Football is everything to them. Out West, football ain't everything. There's so many other things for you to do, to watch, and to fill your time and spend your money, that is not a priority right now. So eventually the West is going to have to pony up and get with the program or they're going to get left behind.
All right, Rich Eisen, Tom Fornelli aren't the only people sounding off. Many people talking about this major news. We thought that maybe it would end at least for the next couple months with Oklahoma and Texas leaving the Big 12 for the SEC, but no, another major blow to college football, or maybe a boost, depending on how you look at it. Paul Feinbaum, though, talking about he sees student-athletes used as pawns here.
And I'm just gratified that the leaders of college athletics care so much about the student-athletes and their mental well-being that they're going to put softball players on a plane in California to go to Piscataway for a weekend series with Rutgers. But that's where we are, and trying to take my cynical hat off, which is impossible today in college athletics, what we have is just a battle of the two behemoths, and that's the SEC and the Big Ten. This is similar to what's going on Wall Street, between the biggest companies vying for your dollar. And that's what this is about. This is about money, pure and simple. Hannah, don't let any college commissioner or president tell you otherwise. They're a greedy bunch. That's what they care about. And the students who happen to play athletics are the pawn in this big prize.
Are we surprised, though, that money is the motivation to all of this?
Nope.
Of course not. Money controls the world. Money makes the world go round. We live in a greedy society. That's just how things work. That's how business works. And no matter how you look at it, universities are business. And the players are the employees that have been exploited, but now they're getting money. All right. So everyone, now the ADs are like, look, the players are getting money. The universities are getting money. Let's just treat it as it is and treat it as a business and make the most biggest, strongest conference you've ever seen in college football, in college sports. And go at it. Things change. And if you don't get with what's happening right now, these universities are going to get left behind. And if you stay in the mind frame that, oh, college sports, it's about loyalty. It's about repping your school. It's about all these little things that we loved about college football. They're slowly disappearing. And that's just the way the world works. You got to jump on, man, and enjoy the ride.
It's really interesting to look back at Rich Eisen's comment talking about NILs being an accelerant. I think it's interesting he didn't choose cause or impetus as the word he used when he talked about NILs. Because to me, Bump, there are three fascinating roots of this that you could look at. And I think that all three play into it, but I'm trying to figure out which one came first, mm-hmm. right? So you've got NILs, the ability for student athletes to make money from their names, images, and likeness, and for the first time have schools that can compete with different offers that are playing different on different level fields here. Then the other thing you've got is Larry Scott, his impact on the Pac-12. So this isolates the Pac-12 from the impact, the things that have impacted college football as a whole, and it just looks at the Pac-12. What's changed there? A really horrible tenure with someone who clearly mishandled media rights in his media packages. Number three, just capitalism and college football and TV rights and TV deals and the evolution of a game over, you know, many, 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 many years, and what college football has become, and whether this kind of outcome, whether it was Nils, whether it was a bad commissioner, was maybe always inevitable.
Yeah, college football is the most popular brand of sports across the country. Now, you can look at the NFL and say they make all this money, but you're kind of isolated to, 30-something teams.
Uh-huh.
NCAA football, man, you got 100-plus D1 teams. You can reach people in North Dakota. NFL, you're not reaching anybody in North Dakota. You can reach people in Alabama, as we know. The NFL is not touching Alabama. Just because there's so many universities across the country, there's so many opportunities to make money. This is just good business for people involved with athletics. This is great business. Good for them. Now, you might feel some type of way because you feel like they're changing the way that college football looks. You're taking away just the freshness or the realness of the sport, and you're making it into a business. But that's just what it is. There's nothing you can do to stop it right now. There's absolutely nothing. So even if you don't agree with it, you want to pound on the desk and scream from the mountaintop, so what? It's still going to happen. So what options do you have? You got to get ahead of this thing. If you are a smaller university,
yeah,
you got to reach out to your alum. You got to get ahead of this and just embrace yourself because it's only going to get worse.
I know the question you have listening is, hey, I'm a Husky. Hey, I'm a Coug. What happens with the Apple Cup? What happens with UW? I mean, for that matter, what happens with Oregon? We're going to get to that conversation with one of your colleagues, Bump, Guy Haberman of the Pac-12 Network, coming up in 15 minutes. Before then, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, the Mariners continued riding the hot bats of Julio and Cal Raleigh in their 8-6 win over the A's in the series opener last night. What's the real headline?
Hey, great news. One of these guys isn't going anywhere over the next couple series. So, look, if you're going to be looking at how does this team get by without one of their leaders, one of their top four hitters in the lineup for a while, well, it's a guy outside of the top four hitters right now, but who's been picking up steam this month, Cal Raleigh.
Yeah, we know that suspensions are coming. We've already seen JP have to sit down for a little bit. So how do you survive this wave right here? You need guys like Cal Raleigh to step up. You need guys like Demo to go yard. And Demo challenged Julio's bomb the other day. I think he was just a few feet shorter than what Julio hit. But you need guys that you don't expect to step up in these moments. I mean, Cal, it's fun seeing the big man run those bases and do what he do. But, yeah, that's how you win. And you got to back up your pitching. We were so used to these starters going 6-7 innings, only giving up 2-3 runs. Last night, Logan struggled. The bat's got to have his back when the mound isn't getting it done. That's how you get it done. Last night, 8-6.
Now, Bump, we've only been hosting together for 2 weeks, but you knew me and Curtis. We were all friends before we started this new iteration
closer
of the
with
show.
Me than you.
Okay, well, that's you know, so you know me. I am not one to brag. Okay, I am not one to make it about me. I never do that.
Not me, never.
However, I will say that in yesterday's hype train, I had a hype train that Julio hit the last Mariners home run and will hit the next Mariners home run. You know who boarded that one?
You did.
I did.
The set and the 1-2 pitch, the Raleigh swing and a fly ball deep set.
Oh, wait, wrong highlight. Jeez.
I thought you were going to just one-up me and be like, that's funny because Bump bet that it would be Cal.
Let's see. Here we go.
Okay.
Swing and it's clubbed out to center. This is on its way back to the batter's eye. Gone, Julio, home run. Straight away center field mashed. He has given the Mariners a 2-1 lead.
By the way, you know who leads the team in home runs now?
I know. Yeah, Curtis. Who does?
Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah, and who predicted that, Curtis?
Me,
yeah,
of course.
No, that's what I'm saying. Good job.
He's not one
job.
To brag.
No, he's not one to brag. Not one to brag.
For those scoring at home, which I'm sure all of you are.
Of course.
I got that right.
Yeah. Well, all right. 1-1.
I'm just glad I didn't take the bet.
Well, the thing is, you did say Cal would get a home run, and I'm counting it. I am counting that as an inside the park home run.
I'm taking it too. Come on now.
Next headline.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number two, lost in the craziness of yesterday, Kevin Durant has officially requested a trade from the Brooklyn Nets less than a year after signing a four-year extension with the team. What's the real headline?
Might I suggest joining the Pac-12?
Got some openings.
Hey, we got some opportunities here, Kevin.
We got some spots for
Let's
you,
go,
baby.
KD.
Here's the thing about KD, and let me preface this. I'm not a LeBron James fan. Like, I support him. He plays for my team. But
really?
I just don't.
Why?
I appreciate him. Because growing up in my era, you're LeBron or you're Kobe.
Okay.
I'm Kobe, right? Sense. But people gave LeBron so much stuff for leaving and creating teams and jumping around. But everywhere he went, he did win a championship. KD, but no one says nothing to KD about this. KD's is allowed to do what he wants to do, which he can. You're a grown man. You don't want to be with the Nets. Go ahead and do what you do. But how is this going to affect his legacy? I still think he's one of the best players to ever do it. But he's got to start winning some championships here pretty soon. Or guys like Steph Curry, who might have already passed him up, are going to be in front of him. So, yeah, KD, do what you got to do, but choose wisely, sir.
Now, how weird. Ari Mirov retweeted or kind of screenshot something from Woj from the 30th, and he said, this was 3 years ago today. Obviously, this was yesterday. Brooklyn's making a clean sweep tonight. They're going to sign Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and DeAndre Jordan, league sources tell ESPN. It's the timing for me. Wild.
Headline Rewrites.
Headline number three, Deshaun Watson's disciplinary hearing with the NFL has concluded after 3 days. What's the real headline?
We're about to find out how much power Roger Goodell is willing to wield.
This situation is so weird, right? If either side appeals, then the decision goes to Roger Goodell. And the messed up part is that the NFLPA, like, signed this deal. Like, they gave Roger Goodell this power in this situation. So, yeah, we're going to see what he thinks, how he feels, what type of punishment is going to happen. He needs to miss at least a year, though. And I think that's going to happen.
I'm going to catch you guys up with the latest in case you missed some of those updates yesterday. There were two conflicting reports, two anonymous NFL sources, one via the AP, one via Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the Cleveland Browns. One said, hey, the league wants an indefinite suspension, maybe a minimum 1 year suspension. Meanwhile, Deshaun Watson and his attorneys want him to be able to play this season. Mm-hmm. Should the judge rule 6 to 8 games, though, the NFL may accept that punishment because they don't want to enter arbitration. They think that the arbitration process could be costly or harmful or whatever, and they would rather skirt that by accepting the 6 to 8 game suspension. The other report said, no, the league is not budging on its 1 year suspension. Minimum 1 year suspension, it's not willing to budge. Things get leaked for all kinds of reasons. It could be the NFL leaking something to see how people would respond. It could be, you know, that it just got out from someone talking too much. Either way, though, it's clear that the league is looking at around a year. Whether they're willing to acquiesce and accept a lesser punishment is kind of remains to be seen.
A year's coming. In minimum, I think that's what he deserves, honestly.
I'm going to add on a listener from the 425. We were joking about KD joining the Pac-12. Breaking news, KD joins the LIV Golf Tour.
I knew that day was coming.
I knew it. Money talks. It's Bump and Stacy. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. So here's what's up today. We've got lots of Mariners stuff coming up at 11. Shannon Dreher is going to join us to talk about this team moving forward, not just through the rest of the series, but when we might hear about the appeals for some of those other suspensions. Obviously, looking at Cal Raleigh's development. Bump, I know you've been really excited about that one. When can we jump in believing with both feet when it comes to Cal? We're there with Julio. When can we be there with Cal? Coming up at 10:45, we will get to Seahawks news. Bump has been giving us his upon further review. A closer inspection to each Seahawks position group. We've looked at defensive backs, running backs, tight ends, a couple guys up front, and now we're going to continue with the offensive line. So that's coming up at 10:45. I know a lot of you are really eager to hear that one. First, though, we're going to jump back to this conversation about a major move in college football with USC and UCLA leaving the Pac-12. The question all of you have, what does it mean for UW? What does it mean for Oregon? What does it mean for Wazoo? And what does it mean for a lot of the cherished rivalries between so many of these Pac-12 schools? Guy Haberman of the Pac-12 Network joins us next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
What's next for UW? What's next for Wazoo? What's next for Oregon and OSU in the Pac-12 now that USC and UCLA have left? For the Big Ten, lots of big questions you guys have, and we're turning to one guy to answer them. In fact, Guy Haberman of the Pac-12 Network and Sirius XM on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Guy, how's it going?
It's going well, Stacy. Good to talk to you, Bump. Good to talk to you.
What's up, man?
Yeah, I mean, I'm spending a lot of time on the phone, as I'm sure.
I would imagine.
I'm not doing any like hardcore reporting, to be clear. That's not my bag. I'm just running through scenarios. Everybody's got ideas. And, you know, you hear things along the way, but a lot of ideas flying around right now.
Yeah, a lot of ideas, right? We're trying to find solutions, Guy. And I'm looking at the Pac-12. I'm like, how do they survive the situation? You clearly got to go out and either get teams to join this league or – does the Pac-12 just dissolve? What do you think is more likely, like the Pac-12 just becoming a lesser division or the Pac-12 trying to reach out to maybe teams who aren't specifically on the West and trying to get them to join the squad?
Yeah, I don't know which one's more likely, but I mean, those are the, you know, I think the first thing, if you're the Pac-12, and it's funny the way we talk about this, like if you're Washington, you're trying to save the Pac-12 until somebody else calls you to offer you a bigger deal, and then good luck to you guys, right?
Yeah.
And I have no problem making judgments, you know, like being judgmental or whatever. But in this case, that's not a judgment. I went to Fresno State, and this is, you know, people who have been college football fans for a long time will remember, once upon a time, there was something called the Western Athletic Conference, mm-hmm. and it actually still exists. You just may not know it. And people started leaving for the Mountain West, and the leadership of the WAC, everybody agreed to this it was like a commitment of loyalty to one another, which lasted, you know, like 4 days until somebody else got the call. And Fresno State got the call and they left, and everyone, I'm just using examples, at Hawaii was mad at them until they got the call. Like, all right, yeah. No, never mind. We understand why you did it. And so it creates, as it always does, everybody for themselves. And, you know, so here we are. So that said, when you try to figure out what is the move, if you're the Pac-12 and you still have Oregon and Washington, what is your move? And I think first and foremost, you've got to convince Oregon and Washington that this is the best place for them. But I don't really know that you can convince them of that so much as you have to create an environment that is okay to stay in, because, you know, your best bet is, or your best hope is that the Big Ten doesn't call them, or the Big Ten doesn't say, okay, yeah, you're in. Mm-hmm. Because at this point, I don't know how you would say no to such a thing if you were Oregon and Washington. You know, you're actively trying to get it. And if that happens, then, you know, your second scenario bump of a league that feels like it's, you know, on the verge of going down a level, that's where you are. Now, the alternative is, if you can find some sort of partnership with the Big 12 and, you know, you can create a league that, while it's not going to be getting $100 million per team from its television revenue per year, like some people are suggesting the Big 10 is going to get, if you can create something that can remain somewhat competitive and can create television matchups that are still attractive, and you have enough members that you can, you know, create a bunch of pockets of fan bases. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's your hope. You know, I was just talking to somebody who made the suggestion that, you know, maybe you go to, you take the live, you find somebody who has money like the Saudi government has. I don't know if you can go quite to that level, but where live golf is not really about making money, right? It's not about your television contract. And so can you find somebody like Amazon to pay an outsized amount of money to Oregon and Washington, let's say, and, you know, basically say to them, we're going to do this Pac-12 TV deal, and you are going to get paid like what the Big Ten pays, or close to it. And because of that, you're going to become the biggest powers on this side of the country, and it's going to be great for you. You know, I think all of these pipe dreams, the only pipe dream, the only scenario I keep hearing that I think is not even, is very unlikely is the whole, you know, relegation thing that comes up from time to time. That one's not going to work, but this is a time when, all kinds of ideas are on the table. And I think from a Pac-12 perspective, the first thing you got to hope is that Washington and Oregon's phones don't ring and that it's the Big Ten on the other end. Because at this point, it almost feels like you'd be doing yourself a disservice not to try and pursue that.
Yeah, I hear you. Guy, by the way, we have a listener in Fresno shouting out saying, let's go Fresno State Bulldogs. So you've got a fellow alum out there giving you a shout out. We were talking about some of the rivalry games, the Apple Cup obviously being one that is sacred here, that people love here, family traditions too connected to that. Obviously, you've got the game between Oregon State and Oregon. Bump said that he could see that being something, you know, should UW and Oregon leave, that's played in a non-conference September thing, or it could be fully eliminated. What do you see happening with some of those long-held rivalries between in-state schools that are probably going to be in different conferences?
Yeah. I mean, you'd love to keep them, you know, like that game is one I've talked to a lot of people about over the last 24 hours, just because it's such a great example of what makes college sports special, because there is a financial gap between the two institutions. And yet every year they play on Friday night or Saturday sometimes, like last year. And, or like this, I think this year's on Saturday. and it's on Fox, and it's fantastic. I mean, it's great. It's or ESPN, I guess it alternates years, but it's great every time. It's just, it's special. And I was just talking to a buddy of mine about, like, trying to get to the bottom of what is a tradition? Why do they matter to college football? And can you create new ones? And I think on the most fundamental level, these rivalries, they're geographical. I mean, I'm not breaking any ground here when I say that, but like, can you create a Nebraska UCLA game that in 30 years feels just as big as Washington State does? Like, if Nebraska and UCLA football play for 20 years and it becomes the most competitive 20 years that any two-team matchup has ever seen, they go to overtime every single year. It's crazy. Like, it's unbelievable. In 20 years, does that game have as much passion as Washington State does? I don't know. But I don't think so. Like, I think, you know, neighborhoods, high schools, colleges, and professional teams, like, for the most part, the rivalries are geographical. And, you know, I mean, we lost Texas A&M for a time. It's going to be back. But you thought, how could you lose that game? Like, that game is not going to matter in the same way when they're in different leagues. And now they're going to be in the same league, and it's, you know, going to matter again on a level that it can't matter when you're not in the same league. I don't think those games can matter the same way when you're not in the same league. And I think in a world of super leagues, super leagues have so many teams that I don't really see much incentive to play teams that are not a part of the super league structure. You know, I think one of the things, like, I was just looking at talking about UCLA's non-conference schedule this year. It's terrible. It is, and I'm not saying this like off the cuff. I've thought about it. It is truly one of the least competitive non-conference football schedules ever assembled in the history of the sport. Now, it's not completely their fault because they had a game with Michigan that Michigan canceled. But this year, UCLA plays Bowling Green, Alabama State, and South Alabama. That is not a schedule created for fans. Like, if you're a season ticket holder, that ain't for you. It's not good. It's 3 weeks of not a very good product. And, you know, in a world where the college football playoff expands and you have super leagues, there's going to be way less incentive to go undefeated. And, you know, you're not going to have this discrepancy in the super leagues among teams necessarily, where your goal is, well, we got to each get three extra home games or two extra home games. So we're going to schedule teams that will only come to us and we won't have to play a return game for. And so I think in a super league world, that's actually one area where the fans would benefit, is you get less of those types of games. All due respect to Kent State, you know, that's not an ideal game for anybody. So if you really play that out, then how do you have non-Super League kind of rivalry games unless, you know, somebody puts their foot down and says, even though, you know, it's not the biggest moneymaker on the grand scale, it is, it's just necessary because we've got to keep some traditions involved here.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I mean, leagues realign and traditions kind of go away. That's the way that it's been historically. You know, I remember a couple of years ago when Colorado played Nebraska, it felt like such a big game because it used to be one, but they don't play every year anymore. And, you know, unfortunately, now again, I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but I just, in a world of super leagues where you have, you know, let's say it's just the SEC and the Big Ten one day, and they've got 40 teams total. Well, 40 teams, why would you ever play games outside of the super leagues, you know?
Right.
If those are the 40 best moneymakers.
All good points, all good questions brought up to you. He is Guy Haberman, Pac-12 Network and Sirius XM host. Guy, we know it's been an insane 24 hours for you, given the news, but we appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thanks
so much. It's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. A closer look at the offensive line for the Seahawks. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Talking Mariners with Shannon Dreher coming up in 15 minutes. Before we get to that, we've been taking a closer look at each and every Seahawks position group as we are now less than a month away from the start of training camp. We've looked at tight ends. We've looked at running backs. We've looked at wide receivers and defensive backs. Going back to offense for this one with the offensive line. The theme is simple. One thing, Bump, that you are excited about and every Seahawks fan should be excited about. And one lingering question you have that still makes you nervous. So let's go.
All right, let's talk about this offensive line. Let's start with what I am concerned. I should know this by now.
Yeah, we'll go glass half empty even, but we'll go bad news before good news.
All right.
Question before excitement.
Yeah, so what am I concerned about? I'm concerned about the tackles. Now, not just because they are young guys. I'm assuming Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas will be the tackles. And I have the same concerns that a lot of you have. They're from an air raid offense. Yeah. Are they used to gap scheme run blocking? How are they going to do with the zone? Like, because we know that this team wants to be run heavy, especially with the quarterback position. So when you have two rookies on the outside, these guys are going to have to handle stunts. I mean, a lot of the times you're one-on-one on the outside, but every now and then they'll swoop a D-tackle around. You have to pass guys off. You have to pick them up. But if you're going to have rookies, I like the outside because a lot of the times you are one-on-one, but they're rookies. And they're going to be responsible for protecting a quarterback that we're just unsure about. Whoever it is, we're unsure about their quarterback position. But I like Charles Cross. I like Abraham Lucas because they are athletic guys. You throw on the film, there's no denying that these guys can get downhill. And they have the movement with their body to handle a lot of things that they're going to see when it comes to opposing defenses. So that's what I'm concerned about. And one more thing I am concerned about is Damian Lewis. I just want to bounce back. Like, I think he's going to be fine, but last year was not his greatest year, and I think he understands that. But this is also a guy who played tackle, center, and guard within 2 years in the league. Like, this dude never played center before in his life. He gets mm-hmm. in the NFL, and he plays center. So we know that he can handle a lot that's thrown at him. But my concerns, I got to start on the outside with the young guys.
Going back to Lewis very quickly, how much of his struggles do you think were from swapping from one side to the other with guard?
You know, when I talk, and I've never played, you know, I played one snap of lineman when I was in high school.
Nice.
I said, "Coach, I just want to play lineman and say that I did it." And I got played guard and I got pancaked. And I'm like, "All right, I'll never play there again."
So much for that experiment.
Yeah, but the struggles you said just from moving around. I think that from one side to the other, it's definitely different. Now I always lean on Ray Roberts when it comes to this. He goes, "Look, people think like a right guard is a right guard, left guard is a left guard, and you can just swap both ways. It just doesn't work that way." So how difficult, I'm not sure. But talking to the big boys, the guys I know in the trenches, they say, "Look, it is an adaption. You have to adjust a little bit." But these guys are pros, man. I mean, that's what they do, is adjust. So I'm sure that contributed a little bit, but he's also been banged up a little bit, you know what I'm saying? And you know, sometimes you hit that sophomore slump.
It happens. All right, nervous about having two young tackles from an air raid system and kind of that adjustment that young guys have to the league anyway. Nervous a bit about Damian Lewis, though hoping he can bounce back. Let's talk about what every fan should be excited about.
You should be excited about Austin Blythe. And the reason why I'm excited about him is because, one, he's a veteran, and he's going to be able to help whatever quarterback is under center. He's going to be able to change protection if need be and communicate with this offensive line. People always talk about the quarterback being the smartest guy on the field. Most of the time, yeah. After that, it's probably the center. He sees the box. He makes the checks. He's talking to his offensive line. And I love the way he is in space. You throw on the film on Austin Blythe. I did a breakdown with Shane Waldron a couple weeks ago. Man, we watch him in space. That's a big man moving. I mean, he gets his body on a body, and he's violent at the point of attack. If you want to be great in the screen game, you want to be great in the zone, you got to be able to get to that second level and create space for your running backs. That's exactly what Austin Blythe is going to do, and he's going to help that quarterback out. You know, maybe the quarterback doesn't. Maybe we have Drew Lock under center, and he's mm-hmm. still learning this offense. He's still developing. He can lean on Austin Blythe. He's going, "Look, I'm not even going to worry about the protection, all right? I'm just going to go through my reads. High to low, 1, 2, to 3. Blythe, you take care of all that for me." So there's a bit of a cushion right there. I'm excited about Blythe. He's a smart veteran, and he's great in space.
I got to say, Bump, the answer I was not expecting. I like it. I love the explanation. I completely thought, obviously this was prior to the segment starting, that you were going to go, "Fans should be excited about Abe Lucas, obviously, Coug, or Charles Cross, just because it's, you know, he's the number nine overall pick. He's this, you know, big draft capital and you know, a type of like a five-star type guy, a blue-chip type guy coming in for you. But I like the Austin Blythe answer. He's got him, got guys like Justin Coleman. Like, there are a couple random signings that got kind of overlooked with all the excitement and news and drama of the Seahawks offseason. I like that answer. All right, it's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Talking Mariners next with Shannon Dreyer.